It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Monday, March 31st, the final day of March. It'll be April Fool's tomorrow, so watch out all you hoodats out there for any false Saints news that'll be on social media in abundance. Don't fall for it. Steve Geller along with Charlie Long bring you until 7 o'clock this evening. That's when the Jay Johnson Show will take over. Hearing from Coach after the Bayou Bengals getting a sweep this weekend, although it was a very long rain delayed sweep. There was, I think, in total about 5.5 hours of rain delay action between the two games this weekend.
Was it just that?
Was it just
No, like, I literally thought it was more. I mean, the last two games of the weekend series ended at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I think Friday was 2.5 hours, and then Saturday was three, I believe.
Saturday's game ended at close to 2 a.m. Oh, man, it was tough. But we got through it, and it was a sweep, which was gigantic for this LSU baseball team. 7-2 in conference play. That's a really, really strong start. Two sweeps, and then the series lost to Texas. They had this upcoming road series against Oklahoma. I can't wait to break it all down with Joe Healy here in just a little bit here, Steve. But good stuff from LSU baseball. The opener for me was the big one against Mississippi State,
right,
where they're pitching off Pico Khan, their ace pitcher. He's going to be staying on Friday. They're kind of avoiding Cade Anderson in the Khan matchup. And so that game one became so important, and Cade kind of gets lit up like he hasn't been lit up at all this season. Gives up three home runs. You find yourself in a 6-2 hole. But then that five spot in the fifth inning where walk, Dickinson three-run shot, single, Milam two-run shot. All of a sudden you turn a 6-2 deficit into a 7-6 lead. And then Zach Cowan out of the bullpen just locks him down for the final four innings, and you pick up that series opening win. That was gigantic.
Because the bullpen seemed to be the big story this weekend for the Bayou Bengals.
You go from potentially being down 0-1 with Mississippi State's ace ready to go in game two to stealing that game on Thursday night. And then, you know, all you have to do is take down the ace to win the series and then be in position to sweep. And that's exactly what they did. It was a pitching duel in that second game. Khan was really, really good. It's just LSU was a little bit better. Anthony Ianson and Cason Evans were fantastic. They combined for 9 innings, giving up one run against a good Mississippi State offense. And then you win the series. And then Sunday's game becomes, or I say Sunday's game, game three.
I know, right?
Yeah, game three kind of becomes gravy at that point. You win the series. That's what you were looking to do. And then you pull out the sweep because your offense puts up an 8 spot in the first inning. So great stuff from LSU baseball this past weekend. I kind of recapped all of it there. But, you know, you're kind of, the question mark is now, a lot of folks have, you know what you have in Cowan, you know what you have in Evans, who is that going to step up and be that true third bullpen piece? You know what I mean? Like, maybe it's Jaden Newt.
And we still haven't seen Gavin Guidry.
Gavin Guidry still doesn't play. That's true. And so it could be him as well. Like, he's going to throw his hat in the ring. But right now, it feels like Jay is ultra confident, and he has every right in the world to be, in Cowan and Evans, because they've been fantastic out of the bullpen for this LSU baseball team, behind Cade Anderson and Ianson, who have been great as starters. So you kind of have the formula for the start of a weekend series, right? Sunday kind of becomes the question mark. And Chase Shores, I hope he's okay. I mean, he took one off the face.
Yeah, he did.
It's like, you hope he's all right. But he had a rough second inning, but outside of that, he was really solid in his start. Who's going to be the guys that step up behind him? You know what I mean? And I know people will say that, you know, Cowan should be a starter in the SEC by the time the season's over. We'll see what Jay decides to do, because I think there is, you know, the value in having a relief ace as well. Someone that you can count on to pitch those final few innings in a very, very tightly contested matchup. And he's got two of them with Cowan's and Case and Evans. So some pieces emerging for this LSU baseball team.
Looking over from the diamond to the hardwood, the LSU women's basketball team falling in their Elite Eight matchup, 72-65 to UCLA. Hard-fought game, went back and forth. The Bayou Bengals didn't get a late call on a ball going out of bounds. It seemed was off of a UCLA player, and ended up being Bruins ball. Still unfortunate there for them, but overall, the Tigers fought hard in that matchup. Definitely a very emotional post-game press conference where we heard from the Lady Tigers afterwards, and Flauje Johnson, Anissa Morrow, just some of the girls that were asked some questions in the post-game. We'll hear some of that emotional back and forth right here of what the Tigers were asked about, you know, their season, and also head coach Kim Mulkey. Let's listen.
I want to ask you guys about the season as a whole. How do you think you'll remember it? What do you think the memories are that you'll take from it? I guess we'll start with Flauje.
First, I just want to thank God. Like, I feel like this season I went through so much, and I really like overcame a lot. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like the number one thing is my relationship with God. Like, it got so much better because that's who I ran to when stuff got hard. And then when I went to God, I was able to open up to my teammates. I was able to open up to Coach Mulkey. And I feel like I became a better person. And I really became a leader. And that's who I am at heart. And that's, like, I want to continue to be a better person. So we had success. We made history, but man, you know, I have sisters for life, and God, man, he's so good. Like, even in this moment of defeat, like, I'm still like, thank you, Jesus, for the opportunity, you know? So I think it's a lot to be learned from this. I'm definitely going to sit back, learn, but just gained so much perspective from this year. It was beautiful.
Anissa?
I would just say, honestly, I'm just grateful for the opportunity. A lot of people don't get the opportunity that I get. And that I received just to be able to come to LSU. I feel like they helped me not only mature on the basketball floor, but as a person. And Coach Mulkey, thank you for everything. Seriously. Coach Mulkey challenged me to be a better person, to be a better player. And she challenged me to be able to make it in the real world. She keep it real with you. She show you how it is. And I'm honestly just grateful for that. I said that I wanted to leave DePaul and find my second family, and I did that. They've had my back through it all. They've encouraged me throughout the process, and I know that it was hard being away from your family and honestly experiencing a culture shock. I had to grow up a lot, and I put a lot on my shoulders to come out and do what I did every night. Nobody in the country did what I did every night. Nobody in the country have done what I did over the 4 years. And I'm honestly just proud of myself for overcoming as much as I overcame and being to do it at the biggest level.
Michaela?
I think for me, the biggest word is thankful. I'm just thankful to be able to play with Anissa Morrow for 2 years. Thankful to be able to play with Flauje. Thankful to be coached by Coach Mulkey. Thankful to be on one of the biggest platforms that I could be on for women's basketball. And I think another word for me is learning. Like, I'm still learning. I'm only a sophomore, so I've learned so much from Nice. I've learned so much from Flage. I've learned so much from Monty, all the seniors and everything. So I just continue to take those things, learn, and then hopefully when we come back again, I'll have better decisions and better knowledge of what to do in those certain times.
Anissa Murrow, definitely leaving the program for the LSU Tigers. She's a senior. As for Flage Johnson, we don't know that one, Charlie. Will she go to the NBA draft? Will she come back another year? We did just get word as the show was going on in the 5 o'clock hour that Samaya Smith has entered the transfer portal.
Yeah, you'll see that. I mean, it happens in men's and women's basketball now, like these tournament teams, regardless of how quick or deep they go into the NCAA tournament, will have players entering the portal looking for different opportunities. So it's just the world we live in now in college athletics, Steve.
Definitely unfortunate. I thought Samaya Smith did some pretty good things in the tournament.
Did. No, she absolutely did. She had a good run, and I think it's kind of capitalizing on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, best of luck.
We're going to get more into LSU baseball and the rest of the SEC when we get back from our break. Joe Healy, National College Baseball writer and SEC Extra for D1Baseball.com, will join us right after this. Stay tuned on WWL, folks.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Ooh, welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller with Charlie Long. Happy to welcome in now to the radio huddle, Joe Healy, National College Baseball writer and SEC Extra at D1Baseball.com. Joe, another great weekend of baseball. Thanks so much for joining us today. How you doing?
Doing well. Happy to join you guys. Always enjoy the conversation.
Appreciate it. Like I said, great weekend, and thankfully for LSU baseball, they got a sweep. And it was a little painful to tune into just because of dealing with the rain delays, but that always seems to be the case this time of year. But overall, pretty impressive showing for the Bayou Bengals against Mississippi State. And the bullpen really rose to the occasion for the Tigers in this weekend.
Yeah, big series win, obviously. Good, big for LSU to get the sweep there, especially coming off of the series against Texas. You know, for Mississippi State, it's probably one they're kind of, you know, grimacing over because they had that first game won,
yeah,
and they just couldn't hold off LSU long enough. And, you know, they lose a 2-1 game in the second game of the series. And obviously, you know, any 2-1 game is basically a coin flip, and they lose that one. And then LSU blows them off the field. So Mississippi State's probably feeling like they missed an opportunity. But if you're LSU, I mean, you take those three wins and you don't look back. Any wins in the SEC are big. And you're right, the bullpen's really rounding into form, and you know, the young pitchers have continued to progress. You've got, you know, veterans that are involved there, and you feel like maybe they haven't even totally reached their potential as a group. You know, we can nitpick maybe some of the offensive stuff, but honestly, it's still one of the best lineups in the country. And so maybe LSU isn't up there with Tennessee right now, but they're pretty doggone close in a group with some others at the top of the league.
Yeah, I wanted to recap that Thursday game specifically, Joe, because I felt like that was the tone setter basically for the entire weekend series. As you mentioned, you know, you're down 6-2, but then you score those five runs in the fifth inning, and then Zach Cowan comes out and plays Superman like he's done all season long for this team out of the bullpen, going four innings, giving up one hit and striking out seven batters. And all of a sudden you go from, oh snap, Cade Anderson wasn't that good this weekend, and we have to play Pico Khan in game two. If we lose this game, you know, you could be staring down the barrel of a series loss at home. That wouldn't be very good. Instead, the huge comeback, that five spot in the fifth inning, Zach Cowan being fantastic, and then all of a sudden, you pick up that game one, steal it, basically.
Yeah, it's such a good point, because now you're in a situation where Cade Anderson wasn't great. Mississippi State kind of ambushed him a little bit, but that's just going to happen in SEC play. And unless your name is Paul Skeens or Hagan Smith, you're not just going to go through SEC play without having starts like that. So that just kind of happens. Interestingly, you know, especially with Shores, and obviously he got hit with a comebacker, and so there's concern there, and you know, about him moving forward and his performance, frankly, like I think I talked about with you guys, like, you know, feeling a little bit unsure about that at the back. I mean, I bring that up only because in a guy like Zach Cowan, you now have a little bit of a luxury where if you needed to move Zach Cowan into the rotation, whether on, you know, in a short-term role or maybe to look at him permanently, he's not only a guy who's proven himself this year, but let's not forget that he was a really good pitcher for a Wofford team that LSU learned a lot about last year in regionals. And he's not your typical mid-major guy who just throws a bunch of strikes and has mediocre stuff. Like, it's pretty good stuff. I mean, he's not throwing 97, but he's got a lot of funk in his stuff. And I think he could win SEC games as a starter if he needed to. And so it goes to that depth that LSU has, that I don't want to say Zach Cowan was a little bit of an afterthought, but he was not really someone that was being talked about a ton leading up to the season for LSU. And yet here he is, arguably the most important piece of the pitching staff right now.
Looking at some of the rest of the teams in the conference, another strong weekend from Tennessee. South Carolina put up a fight against the Vols, but the defending national champs did their thing, and poor Texas A&M this weekend gets to face them in Knoxville.
Yeah. I guess you could look at it a couple ways from Texas A&M standpoint. If they magically get better overnight, like, it's an opportunity to really get back going, but more likely than not, it's going to be another tough weekend that digs the hole a little further. I saw Tennessee over the weekend against South Carolina, and how could you not come away impressed? Because you're right, like, South Carolina didn't play badly. They threw strikes. They didn't kick the ball around. South Carolina's just not good enough, right? They just don't have the players Tennessee has. And so I think with Tennessee, what's so interesting to me is just things that would be really difficult for other teams to overcome, they just take in stride. So, for example, they've been without Gavin Keelan, who's been arguably their best player this season. Over the last few weeks, they've been without him. And all that's really done is they've reshuffled, is allow them to get better defensively, because they're playing Ariel Antigua at shortstop, who's an excellent defender. And it's also allowed them to get Dalton Bargo into the lineup more consistently, who is now their hottest hitter in SEC play. And so, look, obviously you want to have a healthy Gavin Keelan, but if he's going to have to miss some time, they've kind of, I don't want to say lucked into it because they're great at developing players, but they have kind of backed their way into, oh, now actually we're probably a deeper team just because we've had to learn how to play without Gavin Keelan. And so right now Tennessee's just kind of rolling.
You know, Joe, when you're looking at the SEC standings through 3 weeks, it feels like the cream is kind of rising to the top, so to speak, where you have Arkansas, Georgia, Tennessee, and Texas all sitting at 8-1 in conference play. LSU's in fifth place, sole possession of fifth place, with a 7-2 record. On the opposite side, you have Florida, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Texas A&M, all getting off to 1-8 starts, and then Missouri's 0-9. But your thoughts on just the top of the conference, because, you know, yes, you see all these really loaded teams, but, I mean, there's a lot of statements being made very, very early. Who's the kind of highlights of the SEC?
Yeah, I think so Georgia and Tennessee have been what I kind of expected them to be. Now, I guess Georgia, maybe they didn't pitch as well as I thought early on. Now that's starting to come around, though, and they are kind of who we thought they were. Same with Arkansas, but man, their offense has just been so much better than I thought it was going to be. I mean, it might be one of the truly elite lineups in college baseball this year at Arkansas, which just hasn't been the case for a while for them. The one outlier I'd say a little bit is Texas. I'm still not totally sold on that team. I think it's vintage Jim Schlossnagel that they're just still finding ways to win games, even if it's not maybe the prettiest thing in the world. What I will say, though, is they're starting to get banged up a little bit. They've missed some guys, Max Ballou, Rylan Galvan, Adrian Rodriguez. Like, those are three really key players that are all out right now or have been out. And the depth for Texas is not such that I think they can deal with that as well as LSU could or Tennessee could or Georgia could or Arkansas could. So they're a little bit of an outlier there for me. What is interesting in the big picture on this is that with the basketball, with men's basketball getting 14 SEC teams into the tournament, there's been talk about could we see that for baseball? And I think it could happen at some point. I just think the top of the league is so good this year, and we've got a group at the bottom that's really struggling and that I think is just kind of stuck in these holes. I don't think this year's the year for that because I just think the bottom is going to be too far down. That could happen in the future, though, but I just don't think this year is that year for baseball.
Looking also in the conference, LSU's this weekend series, which is another Thursday, Friday, Saturday lineup for the Tigers. They're going to be at Oklahoma. Now, Sooners are above 500, but really got tested this weekend and had a tough slate. What can we expect for the Bayou Bengals to be going up against this Oklahoma squad in this next SEC series for the Tigers?
Yeah, the first thing is they've got an ace in Kyson Witherspoon, who he's not been quite as good the last few weeks, but when he's on, he's about as good as anybody in the conference. So that's, he's always going to be a tough customer. They're also, offensively, you're going to have to be able to hold runners and throw runners out on the bases, because if not, they're going to run all over you. They really want to make things happen. They don't have a ton of power. They have some, but not a ton. But their bread is buttered in terms of getting guys on base, making things happen with their speed, and then trying to create havoc. It's been mixed results for them. The pitching has not been as sharp as I thought it was going to be and as we all thought it was going to be. There was a chance their pitching staff was going to be among the elite in the conference, and it's been pretty good, but it's not been that. And the lineup was maybe a pleasant surprise early in the season, and it's starting to backslide a little bit. So I think Oklahoma is kind of where they are right now, which is like literally dead center in the conference, sitting in eighth. I think that's probably about right. So if LSU does the things they need to do, I think this is a series that they'll be able to handle well. But if you let Oklahoma hang around and cause problems for you and speed you up, they are a team that can cause you to have a bad weekend. But I do like how LSU matches up.
How much stock do you put into Joe playing on the road in this matchup? OU is 15-1 at home this season, 4-4 away. It's a gigantic difference. And, you know, LSU going to Norman for this matchup, their only other road series so far was at Texas, and they lost 2-3. So how much stock do you kind of put into going to Norman for this weekend series?
Some, but it's not like going to Knoxville, and not just because Tennessee's a better team, but you know, it's just the atmosphere in Norman. It's a smaller stadium. They have a very vocal, very engaged fan base. This is not a knock on their fan base, but the stadium just has a lower capacity than a lot. It's also got a lot of berm and stuff like that, so that the fans aren't quite as packed in as they are in some other places. So the atmosphere is not going to be quite as raucous as other places. It is also, all turf field and pretty quick, and that's kind of how they like it, because it allows them to get out and run a little bit, and it's one of those places where you have to worry about oversliding and things like that. So that is a little bit of a wrinkle, but it's not going to be a place, as engaged as those fans are, it's not going to be a place where the atmosphere itself is probably going to be problematic in and of itself.
Looking at one of the Tigers studs on this squad, I don't know what other superlatives to describe in Derek Curiel. He's been so awesome this season and just seems like to be a calm, cool customer at the plate too. Just wondering your thoughts on Curiel and what he's been bringing to this Tiger team.
Yeah, he's everything they could have asked for from the jump, right? I mean, it reminds me, I think I've said it on your air before, it reminds me a little bit of, he's a different player, but when Dylan Cruz got to LSU and he was immediately just the most impressive guy on the field, and he was pretty much the most impressive guy on the field the entire time he was there until he went off and got drafted by the Nats. I think it's similar here with Curiel. I think as time goes on, the power will come a little bit more. Right now, he's obviously more of a hit over power guy who, you know, he draws a ton of walks, doesn't swing and miss a lot. You like all that stuff, but I think the power is in there. It's just a matter of his body maturing, but you know, he's kind of the perfect table setter for this team right now. And I really don't think I had high expectations for him and he's exceeded them. I don't really think they could have asked for anything more from him than what we've seen so far.
Joe, LSU ranks, as you mentioned, in the top five of a ton of offensive categories, especially in the SEC, but also in the nation. And it feels like the middle of the lineup has really stepped up as well. I mean, Danny Dickinson has been fantastic, kind of sitting behind Jared Jones in the lineup. And then Stephen Milam as well. We talked about the Mississippi State opener where, you know, you're down early in that matchup. And then those two come up with the biggest swings of the game, a three-run shot and a two-run shot. Daniel Dickinson specifically, when the transfer happened, we had a lot of people questioning, oh, Utah Valley, like, what is Jay doing here? But the question marks about could he hit SEC pitching, I think he's kind of, I know it's early on, he's shown that he can do that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I didn't totally understand. I mean, I guess Utah Valley is just a far lower competition level. We all get that. So I guess on that level, I understand it. But there was even a lot of eyebrow raising about the fact that he didn't really hit with Team USA or on the Cape. He didn't have a good Cape season. And so I think there were a lot of folks kind of looking at it as, hey, is this guy a little bit of smoke and mirrors? And I just never saw that. So I didn't totally understand where it all was coming from. So I'm not particularly surprised he's done this, because all the guy's done since he stepped on a college campus is hit. And so I've been kind of trying to tell people, like, look, this is who he was. And I'm not entirely sure where the critiques came from, because he was such a standout performer at Utah Valley. It was consistent at Utah Valley. It wasn't like there wasn't huge home road splits. There wasn't huge like conference, non-conference splits. Like, he was the same guy the entire time he was there. So he has been a huge catalyst in this lineup. And he's been one of the, frankly, I thought he might, if we were going to say, how would it be different in the SEC? I wondered if maybe the power wouldn't necessarily translate. He'd be a good average guy, but maybe not so much a power guy, but he's impacting the baseball as well. So he's kind of been the total package, even in maybe a way that me, someone who defended him quite a bit, maybe in a way that I didn't totally expect.
Joe, wondering if you've seen much of Louisiana Tech this year. They're going to be taking on the Tigers tomorrow in Alec Box Stadium. Bulldogs 17-11 on this season and 4-2 in conference play.
Yeah, consistency is kind of the name of the game for them. I mean, La Tech at this point, I mean, there's not so long ago that La Tech was kind of one of the also-rans of, the state of Louisiana in baseball. And they're just so much, their floor is just so much higher here. Now, I will say, this is not one of their standout teams. I've not seen a ton of them, watching them here and there. I've seen some. This is not one of their standout teams, but the thing that LSU knows and better than anybody is that when you get these in-state teams in here, a lot of these kids for Louisiana Tech who grew up in Louisiana or just on the Gulf Coast in general wanted to play at Alec Box Stadium and weren't good enough or were perceived to not be good enough. And so these teams come in motivated. So you can't take it lightly, because La Tech's floor as a program is just so high. They're off to a good start in conference play in a pretty solid conference. So it's tricky, but this is not necessarily like, 2019 Louisiana Tech, where they could legitimately come in and just totally beat you in all facets of the game.
Joe, also elsewhere around the conference, Alabama at Auburn this weekend. It's going to be a fun top 15 type of matchup. I think Auburn's actually number 16. But then also Georgia and Texas is kind of the premium matchup in the top five. I know you had mentioned Texas is maybe, you got to see it from them. Coach Loss, everywhere he goes, he just wins. So we'll have to see what happens there. But your thoughts on the SEC matchups this weekend? LSU and Oklahoma being a top 10 matchup is obviously a highlight, but there's a couple other good ones too.
Yeah, Alabama-Auburn feels like a little bit of a pivot series for those two teams, because I feel fairly similarly about the two of them. Both have good offenses. Both have questions on the mound. I like Alabama's pitching staff more right now, but I think I might like Auburn's pitching staff more in May, because they've got a decent number of young guys. They're just kind of bringing along slowly, and those guys are really talented, and I wonder if they'll be real weapons come May and June. So they are pretty similar teams. I think there'll be some runs scored in this series. One key for Alabama is whether they get Riley Quick back. He's been dealing with a blood blister, and kind of hard to spin the ball real hard if you've got a blood blister. So he was out last weekend. They still won the series anyway, so kudos to Alabama on that. But that's going to be a key there. And then Georgia and Texas, it's how well, and this is the question with anybody who plays Georgia, like, how well does the pitching hold up against that offense? Because right now, it just feels like there's no stopping the Georgia lineup. So it's really just about how much can you slow them down. And pitching was always going to be more of the question with Texas. So I think it's going to be an interesting matchup.
Always a pleasure to hear from you, Joe. Thanks for dropping some knowledge on us on this Monday. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you guys having me. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe Healy, National College Baseball writer and SEC Extra on D1Baseball.com. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, got some Pelicans news about the remaining seven games of the season. We'll tease that a little and then come back after the break with the information right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. We were just talking some LSU baseball. The Pelicans were also in action this weekend, getting a 98-94 win last night against the Charlotte Hornets. The Birds now 21-54 on the season, but the team has just put out a press release. There are 7 games left in the year for the Birds, and there will not be CJ McCollum or Zion Williamson in action. They will miss the remainder of this season due to their injuries. McCollum was diagnosed with a right foot bone contusion after sustaining that March 23rd at Detroit. He'll continue his rehab program, which includes rest and treatment. Meanwhile, Zion Williamson suffered a lower backbone contusion as the result of a fall during the game March 19th at Minnesota. He'll continue his recovery plan, which includes rest and treatment. So in other words, Charlie, tank season in full mode.
Yeah, I mean, listen, with Zion specifically, the fall that he had, McDaniels kind of, it was an ugly fall in that Minnesota game. So I can understand him missing some time. But also, Steve, the last night's win, you know, you don't want to be a pessimist, but it kind of took them out of contention, it feels like, for the top three odds. Where you have a top three worst record in the NBA, it gives you the best odds at a top four pick.
I know you were texting me. Pelicans Twitter was blowing up about the victory.
Pelicans Twitter was not very happy, and I can't really blame them, because now with a 21-54 record, you're not even locked into the fourth worst record in the NBA, unfortunately. Like, Philly is breathing down your neck, and the Pelicans beat Philly.
Exactly,
both times this year. So the Pelicans own the tiebreaker. If they tie, the Pelicans will move from the fourth best lottery odds to the fifth best lottery odds. And I know it's only a few percentage points, but that's not what you want to see. And so at this point, we'll see what happens. The 76ers are 2 games in front of the Pelicans, or behind, whichever way you want to technically look at it, I guess, for the fifth worst record in the NBA. If they tie, the Pelicans own the tiebreaker because they beat them head-to-head both times. So the Pelicans and the 76ers are the two teams to watch. I don't think they're going to catch the Hornets for a top three worst record, as I mentioned. Those are the two teams to watch down the stretch if you're a Pelicans fan. You're either going to end up with the fourth best odds in the lottery or the fifth.
Remaining on the Pel's 7-game schedule for the rest of this year: at the Clippers, at the Lakers, come home for the Bucks. Then they're at Brooklyn, at Milwaukee, versus the Miami Heat at home, and then close out the year in the Smoothie King Center against OKC. And when I mentioned that to you earlier, you even kind of threw in, man, the Thunder might be resting players at that point.
And they have the West number one seed locked up.
Wrapped up, right.
So they could be resting players. And we'll see what happens. The Pelicans could, even without Zion and CJ, win a couple of games down the stretch. And if the 76ers are on like an embarrassing tank right now. They've lost 8 straight games. They've lost 10 of 11. They've lost games to the worst teams in the NBA, including the Wizards. Like, they are full on charge. And you understand from their perspective that if their pick ends up out of the top 6, then it goes to OKC. So they're doing everything they can to make sure their pick has the best odds to end up in the top 6. It's what we're at this point in the season for the NBA, where teams are just outright tanking. And so,
really no way to fix that.
I mean, here's the issue, right? With the Pelicans and the Sixers, is like, if the Pels win 2 games, they may in fact drop, because I don't know if the Sixers are going to win another game this year. That's how bad they've been playing. And they've been out, like, I mean, the Pelicans saw them basically last week, and we saw what lineup the 76ers were putting on the floor. It's a G League team right now. So, but they're intentionally trying to lose games. It's not a good look, but it is what it is. It's, you know, down the stretch of the season, this is the most unbearable part of the NBA season, because you have two races. You have the teams at the top trying to contend for playoff positioning, and then the teams at the bottom, they're just trying to lose all they can. Did you see how the Charlotte Hornets played down the stretch last night? They didn't want to win that game.
No, they're like, you take it.
Yeah, they gave it. They quite literally threw it away to the Pelicans to pick up that win. And so now,
you mentioned with the 76ers, their final slate of games: Knicks, Bucks, T-Wolves, Heat, Wizards, Hawks, and Bulls.
I'm looking up the odds as far as how they changed from 4 to 5, because I've been so locked into the fourth pick. But, you know, who knows? Maybe the Pels could end up at the fifth worst record and have worse odds. It's a ladder system. I've tried to explain this to people, where if you finish with the worst record in the NBA, the lowest you can drop in the draft lottery is 5, pick 5. Second worst is pick 6. Third worst, pick 7, and it goes on and on and on. So right now, the worst pick the Pelicans could end up with in the draft lottery is pick 8. If they move down to the 5th worst record in the NBA, it drops down to pick 9.
Right.
So I'll pull up the odds specifically, but it gets worse the worse you get.
Hopefully some kind of magic happens again on the draft lottery selection show night and the ping pong balls fall our way and somehow the Pels end up with that top draft pick so they can get Cooper Flagg.
I would love it. I mean, Flagg is incredible. If they win the national championship this year, I think he has a case for being one of the greatest one-and-done players ever
right.
in college basketball. He's been that good. He's going to win National Player of the Year.
What do you make of the noise of he could possibly stick around for another season? I'm not buying it either, honestly.
When he does it, I'll believe it. That's what I've said on this station before. Like, I will not believe it until I see it. Because, yes, NIL money is prevalent in college hoops, and you're probably getting a good contract from Duke basketball. You're making money, sure. But is that money as good as, you know, the 12 plus million you're going to make average annual value at the number one overall pick? And you get into the NBA earlier, a year earlier, which sets you up for that supermax mega deal earlier as well. So I don't see it. I don't think it's going to happen. If it does happen, I would be very surprised. But, you know, anything can happen, I guess.
Like you mentioned, that NIL money is nice. But, you know, the risk of injury and then damaging your draft stock for next season, to me, is just way too exorbitant.
So we got a text here, Steve, asking about the Pelicans' current lottery odds right now. I haven't pulled up.
Okay.
With the 4th worst record, and once again, they could potentially move down to 5 if, you know, they win a couple games and Philly just loses outright. Right now, they have a 12.5% chance to land the number one overall pick, a 12.2% chance to get number 2, 11.9% to get number 3, and 11.5% to get number 4. So decent odds to get in the top 4. It's like 45% chance.
Right.
Past that, it's a 7.2% chance to get number 5, and this is where the highest odds actually come in, 25.7% chance to get number 6, a 16.7% chance to get number 7, and then the lowest that they could possibly end up with, a 2.2% chance to get number 8. So it's going to be a 1-8 range if the Pelicans stay with the 4th worst record in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, considering, you know, where you were this season, it would definitely be disappointing for them to, you know, continue winning now and end up damaging their drafts, you know, their draft positioning.
That's what Pelicans fans were on Twitter were very vocally frustrated with the victory last night over Charlotte. Once again, the Hornets had shut down LaMelo a couple days before that game as well. So, they weren't trying to win that game. And it only hurts their kind of stock as well. So, yeah, Steve, it's going to be kind of a race to the finish line, but it's kind of a trudge. It's the next couple weeks. Just get them over with.
Do you think we're going to hear a lot of, you know, chatter in the offseason about a potential Zion Williamson trade at all? Or you think there's solidified his spot here and that he wants to be in New Orleans?
I think it's the opposite. I think he's kind of locked himself down as far as, you know, the showing the Pelicans that he's the guy to build around. It's just all the injuries this year were unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Like, from the get-go. And so, you know, we've mentioned this before as well, Steve, but the blueprint being the Memphis Grizzlies, right? And all the injuries that they suffered last season, all of a sudden, and I know they just fired Taylor Jenkins, which is still one of the weirder things that's happened so far this season, but they're in the middle of the Western Conference playoff picture with a healthy roster. That's what you're kind of hoping for the Pelicans. You add, you know, a lottery pick from a miserable, injury-riddled campaign the year before. You add another talented player to this roster and make another run at it and see what you can do.
We're going to make a run to break, and when we get back, we'll be throwing things to the LSU Sports Radio Network as we get ready for the Jay Johnson Show coming up at 7 o'clock, but we got one more segment here on Sports Talk. Stay tuned right here on WWL. We'll be right back. Getting ready for the Jay Johnson Show coming up at 7 o'clock here on WWL in the Odyssey app. We were talking about the Pelicans, how Zion Williamson and CJ McCollum's season are over. They are rehabbing their injuries. Will Guillory of the Athletic, Charlie, just put out these stats. Zion Williamson's final numbers for this year, 30 games, averaging 24.6 points, 7.2 rebounds, 5.3 assists, 1.2 steals, a 56.7 field goal percentage, and averaged 28.6 minutes on the court.
Yep. That sounds all about right, Steve. He was in limited action, especially down the stretch where the Pelicans were making sure he stayed healthy throughout the rest of the season. They didn't want him to suffer some kind of catastrophic injury. He was incredibly productive.
Right.
And so we'll see what happens, obviously, with him next year. But him shutting down for the rest of the season, at this point, with where the Pelicans stand in the draft lottery, as I mentioned with the numbers, it's probably the right decision.
Tomorrow on Sports Talk, we'll be reviewing what Saints head coach Kellen Moore had to say at the NFL's owners' meetings, and we'll look at some of the proposed rule changes in the NFL. Are you for or against banning the tush push? Plus, more from Mike D's draft notebook. Then at 6:30, LSU baseball versus Louisiana Tech will join First Pitch on WWL and the Odyssey app, 6:30. Coming up right now, more of LSU baseball. Tune in for the Jay Johnson Show. Have a great night, everybody.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.